Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
We have some value on a global distributed ledger. We had the ability to frictionlessly store and transfer value, and that was Bitcoin. Now, the next logical step is just collateralize the value, lend the value, borrow the value, or transfer the risk of the value, and that's DeFi. It's really the next logical step. So that's why I said, like, if you understand Bitcoin, there's absolutely no excuse for not understanding DeFi. It's the same thing. It's just the next logical step. So I think DeFi is here to stay.
Welcome back to The Breakdown with me, NLW. It's a daily podcast on macro, Bitcoin, and the big picture power shifts remaking our world. The Breakdown is sponsored by Crypto.com, Nexo.io, and Elliptic, and produced and distributed by CoinDesk.
What's going on, guys? It is Wednesday, October 7th, and today my discussion is with Chao Wang, and we get into everything from Bitcoin's macro resilience over the last couple weeks to where DeFi is in its cycle and what the long term actually looks like, what threats could undermine it, and whether or not Bitcoin ends up as the reserve asset for the whole space. First up, however, let's do the brief. First up on the brief today, we really are testing the theory of just how reliant on stimulus the markets are. Maybe the biggest question for traditional markets over the last few weeks has been whether there will be another stimulus package. When it seems like deals are getting closer, markets go up. When it seems like the parties are getting farther away, markets go down. This has gotten so significant that markets, which are historically hostile, at least on the face of it or from a narrative perspective, to a shift to the left, have gotten down with the idea of a Biden win because they think it might mean a bigger stimulus. Well, yesterday, President Trump tweeted out that he had ordered Mitch McConnell to stop negotiating, and the political goal was clearly to paint Nancy Pelosi as the intransigent one. The phraseology, however, made it really tough. It seemed like he was making a unilateral decision to end any possibility of a stimulus until after the election. Markets started tanking. The number of charts floating around on Twitter that show the huge line down are just incredible. Ultimately, the S&P 500 ended down 1.4%, and even Bitcoin went down, prompting Keith McCullough to tweet that apparently Bitcoin needed a stimulus too. Now, President Trump has subsequently backtracked, asking for specific bills to sign right now, like a direct stimulus bill right away. However, I have to say that the most prescient observations about this go to, one, as you'll see later, Chao, who says that his base case is that stimulus is inevitable, based on where we are now, based on us having crossed a Rubicon before. And second, Stuhl Presidente himself, Dave Portnoy. He tweeted out, "I'm on a plane. Donald Trump is trying to show people what will happen to the stock market if people don't elect him. However, he can't win by intentionally tanking the stock market like he just did. He will lose any economic votes he has. He will change his tune soon." Portnoy has, of course, been doing a victory lap ever since then, as Trump's tweets have tried to do exactly that and change that tune and walk it all back. For me, the really notable thing is just how reliant on the idea of more stimulus these markets are. We really are a drug addict that can't get enough. Next up on the brief today, antitrust going after tech. A House panel has issued a proposal after 16 months of investigation. This 449-page report says that Facebook and Google are monopolies, while Apple and Amazon as well have too much power. Their biggest and most substantive recommendation is to consider legislation that wouldn't allow tech companies to own different lines of business, and this would ultimately also lead to breakups of companies that exist today. The response to all of this? Nada. Republicans aren't even close to interested in this type of legislation, and markets completely shrugged it off. Most of these stocks were flat, with Facebook down 1%, and Apple was actually up 1.5%. The Bloomberg headline nailed it. It said, "Tech antitrust push faces brick wall from gap between parties." Basically, if you are interested in the depowering of these massive tech-powered networks, you're going to have to just invent alternatives because change is not going to come from the top. Last up on the brief today, a brief update on central bank digital currencies. This was a topic I dug into much more deeply on Monday, specifically with regard to privacy implications, but I wanted to report some more news from the field. A deputy governor of the People's Bank of China has unveiled some numbers from the DCEP trials that happened in three Chinese cities between April and August. 113,300 consumer digital wallets were opened, as well as 8,859 corporate wallets. These processed the equivalent of 162 million across 3.1 million digital yuan transactions. Those transactions represented 6,700 different use cases, and so the PBOC is claiming quite reasonably, I think, that this makes it the most widely used commercial CBDC. Trials, of course, have now expanded in China, so expect more on this over the coming months. The one other bit of CBDC news that I wanted to mention is that the Korea Herald is reporting that the Bank of Korea is moving from a research to a technical phase to actual trials. This is particularly interesting. Part of what I said on Monday is that over the course of this year, a lot of the CBDC efforts have accelerated, and this is certainly the case in Korea. The Bank of Korea had originally said that it didn't see a need for a CBDC, but then changed its tune very, very quickly. These trials will be a little bit different than China's trials, for example, because they'll start entirely virtual. With that, however, let's go to our main conversation with my guest, Chao Wang. For those of you who aren't familiar, Chao was at Messari for a while helping get that company started and now helps a variety of different types of startups across the space. He's also a personal trader, and I've always found his analysis particularly dispassionate, which is something that is so rare in crypto that it's often just on the face of it hugely differentiating. In this conversation, we talk about Bitcoin and its resilience in the context of macro factors over the last few weeks. We also talk about DeFi and why Chao believes that it is such a logical next step from the foundation that Bitcoin has built. We even discuss why Bitcoin rather than Ether might end up as the reserve asset for DeFi. And finally, we talk about the risk of regulation and whether it makes the entire DeFi project almost null and void or at least highly suspect. Is the chief value proposition of DeFi simply reducing friction? And is that reduction in friction simply skirting around regulations? If that's the case, what future does it have? This is a really interesting conversation, so I hope you enjoy it. All right, we are back. Sir, welcome to the show. It's been long overdue, I feel like.
Yeah, I appreciate having me over.
So I was just telling you before, I have been, I think that we're in a really weird moment right now. And I think that especially going into the elections, we're poised to only see it get weirder in some ways. And you are a very keen observer, I think, of markets from a traditional perspective, a Bitcoin perspective, and a DeFi kind of crypto writ large perspective. So I thought it'd be fun to just kind of let it rip and chat about what we're seeing going on out there and your perceptions of things. And that's kind of what I'm thinking.
Let's do it.
So we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. Donald Trump has just tweeted that there will be no stimulus. He's told Mitch McConnell to stop, and markets don't seem to be liking it. But what do you make of this tweet, I guess, in general? And then maybe we'll talk about Bitcoin as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was taking a nap when Trump tweeted about this, and I missed a couple of really obvious trades. But, you know, my high-level thinking around macro is in election is that I have no edge in this market. I mean, everything boils down to knowing what Washington is going to do next. if you know what Washington is going to do next, then you can make a lot of money. But I don't know that. I have no edging in this market. I mean, last time I really, really followed macro was first half of this year when coronavirus hit. I thought I had an edge because I thought I understood coronavirus better than the vast majority of people in this market. So I traded macro like crazy in the first half of this year. And by the way, that's how I missed the first 3x in DeFi, because I was so obsessed with macro. I mean, people don't know that DeFi actually went up 3x earlier this year before Compound. But now I just, you know, I don't think I can really, I mean, if you trade crypto with a time horizon of 1 or 2 weeks right now, you're essentially trading NASDAQ. And in actuality, very few people have an edge in that. So, you know, I don't really do a ton of discretionary, 2 week kind of trade nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, overall, I mean, stimulus is always going to come. I don't know what's going on currently in Washington, but you know, we crossed the Rubicon during coronavirus with QE Infinity and all that stuff. So stimulus is always going to come. That's my base case. And all this monetary and fiscal stimulus is going to push asset prices to levels that would be totally unthinkable before this year. And that includes stocks, gold, and also Bitcoin, and also like the rest of crypto. But that's more of a long-term thing, right? Like by long-term, I mean like maybe a few months to a couple of years kind of time horizon.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that that's what people are reacting to right now. So a number of people on Bitcoin Twitter, Keith McCullough, like said that he sold all his Bitcoin today. And this is for him is super programmatic in some ways. He has these quads, right? And we move from quad 3 to quad 4. And basically the difference between those two is growth slowing in both, but the expectations of inflation are what's different. So in his quad 3, expectations of inflation rise. That's where we've been for a lot of the year, at least from a narrative perspective, right? People getting more and more nervous about inflation rising, hence the gold trade, hence the Bitcoin trade. Now he's kind of moving into quad 4 in his lexicon, right, which is all about inflation decreasing. So just a sense of potential, deflation or whatever. And it seems to me that in a lot of ways, when you look, like depending on what your time scale is, this is the central debate, is whether you think more people are expecting inflation or whether you think more people are expecting deflation. And pretty much everything follows from there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, for me, I have no edge in this game. Like, over a 3 month time horizon. I guess that's what Keith McCullough's time horizon is, right? Like he switches quads from, you know, one quad to another for a couple months, right? So I guess, you know, a 2 month time horizon is something that I personally have zero edge in. So I have no idea. But I know that this is in the short term, this is a very big debate among the macro investors, whether we're gonna see inflation or deflation in Q4. I have no idea, but in the long term, you know, in the 1 year plus time horizon, I think asset prices are going to go way up.
Yeah.
That's my base case.
So I think it's also interesting, something that I've noticed you kind of say a number of times is that over the last couple of weeks, we've had just this barrage of theoretically bearish news for Bitcoin, right? We've had BitMEX, we had the UK with the derivatives today, although you could argue that kind of both ways in terms of bearish or bullish. But you've had all these sort of things and it hasn't really moved that much, right? Certainly we've gone sideways and down a little bit, but it seems like your sense is that this is a resiliency proving for this asset.
I'm genuinely impressed. And to be honest, I don't really know why Bitcoin has been so stable after the series of really bad news. Like we had KuCoin and then BitMEX and then Trump getting coronavirus and then no stimulus today. And then the UK banning crypto derivatives. I mean, and Bitcoin's at 10.05. It's crazy. I mean, I've seen some theories of, option sellers potentially, like we've seen a lot of new option sellers basically since maybe April, May. And that might suppress the volatility of the spot market. I can see argument Like, I can see why that may be the case. Again, I'm not entirely sure, but I'm just genuinely impressed by the stability of the spot market.
Do you think, I'm interested in your take. I don't know if you've had a chance to like formulate a take because it just came out this morning, but what do you make of the UK's derivatives ban?
I'm not a regulatory expert, but I can see arguments on both sides. It's, you know, I worry about DeFi, to be honest. I'm not sure that the founders have been taking regulations seriously. I mean, a lot of projects did. But there are a couple of areas in DeFi that will be affected by this kind of, you know, by the UK stuff as well as by BitMEX, right? Like, one thing I'm super excited about in DeFi is synthetic assets, the ability to provide high quality assets for anyone in the world. So, for instance, you know, some kind of synthetic assets on US equities, right, that anyone in the world can access. But these synthetic assets are derivatives. And obviously, this new UK news would be bearish for this type of products. But at the same time, I see some pros. I see some reasons for being positive. I personally think the amount of leverage in the crypto market in general is just ridiculously high. Like, people don't need 100x leverage. That's just ridiculous. Like, Warren Buffett in his entire life, at maximum, he might have used like 2x leverage or something. Like, basically, if you have like $1 million, you leverage to $2 million. That's what Warren Buffett did. And he made a killing throughout his life. You don't need that much leverage to make a lot of money. Like, anything above like 2x or something. I mean, of course, if you want to do like short-term trading, it's fine. But, you know, 100x leverage is really detrimental to the market. And that's what we saw in March this year, right? With BitMEX collapsing, the deleveraging of BitMEX. We went all the way from like, what, 7,000 to 3,000 within a day. I mean, that was really bad. I think, you know, I'm generally a, a small regulation kind of guy. Like, I prefer as few regulations as possible. But among all the regulators in the world, I think the derivative regulators are probably the most beneficial to the market, to a healthy functioning of the market. I mean, there is a reason why CME futures are not giving traders, even institutional traders, 100x leverage, right? They give these institutional traders maybe 5x leverage. And that's because they're heavily regulated by the CFTC. So again, you know, this whole story, I can see pros and cons on both. But again, I haven't read the fine prints. I'm not a legal or regulatory expert.
Well, I think that the challenge that you kind of are striking on is that there's almost an inherently broad brushstroke nature to this when you lump together all crypto derivatives or all derivatives of any type, right? You're talking about things which are these really interesting experimental use cases which potentially increase access, and that is in fact their point, right? The synthetic assets like you were just talking about. But you're also talking about like degenerate casino games online, you know, with the leverage. And theoretically, you could, I don't think it's unreasonable to expect regulators to get sophisticated enough to be able to differentiate between these two, but that's not usually going to be the first pass. It's either going to be, it's an all or nothing type of situation, right?
I think that's a good point, yeah.
So you ran a couple of polls that I found really interesting about DeFi investor sentiment over the last couple of weeks. So what was the idea of those polls? What was the prompting for that? Because I thought it was I actually referenced them today on the show before we did this interview.
So I guess the story goes back to maybe early September. When SushiSwap, when the entire SushiSwap drama happened, that was the first sign that told me maybe we're at the top. I mean, it's just the kind of stuff that usually happens at the top, right? Local top, not necessarily like multi-year winter or something like that, but it's the kind of stuff that happens at local top. And I said to myself, if this is indeed a top, then we're going to crash really hard because we just went through a parabolic 10x increase in the entire DeFi market, including all the, you know, all the blue chips, as well as the long tail of DeFi projects. And today we are maybe on average 50% off the top, maybe 60%. Usually this is not the bottom in crypto. Usually we should be prepared for maybe 80% to 90%. I mean, this may or may not happen, right? Like this might be the bottom, but I wanted to see if the market is feeling fear and despair and anger. But I don't really see that today. I still see a lot of hope. So my base case today is we're probably going to be lower still 2 to 3 months from now. Again, I could be totally wrong, but I think based on all the, triangulating a bunch of information, the charts, the sentiment, I think I'm probably 60 to 70% confident I'm right. So that's why I did this poll this morning. But again, DeFi, the fundamentals have been improving. Like paradoxically, the TVL has been increasing over the last month. So, and the founders are working really hard. I see a bunch of new projects in the private market. Like DeFi is here to stay for sure. Like it's DeFi is real. And I'm fairly confident that 2 years from now, DeFi will be higher than it is today.
This episode is brought to you by Crypto.com, the crypto super app that lets you buy, earn, and spend crypto all in one place and earn up to 8.5% per year on your Bitcoin. Download the Crypto.com app now to see the interest rates you could be earning on BTC and more than 20 other coins. Once in the app, you can apply for the Crypto.com metal card, which pays you up to 8% cash back instantly on all purchases. Reserve yours in the Crypto.com app today.
In this crisis, many investors aim to keep and grow their digital assets. Others seek to maximize the yield on their cash. Nexo allows you to achieve exactly these two goals. The company offers instant crypto credit lines against all major cryptocurrencies, with interest rates starting from only 5.9% APR. Nexo also lets you earn up to 10% annually on your fiat and digital assets. What's more, interest is paid out daily, and you can add or withdraw funds at any time. Get started at nexo.io. Introducing Elliptic, the preferred crypto compliance partner for businesses who want to grow with confidence. The busiest compliance teams rely on Elliptic's rigorous blockchain monitoring solutions to scale up and save money. Protect your customers. Manage your risk. Scale your business. Visit elliptic.co/coindesk to talk to a crypto compliance expert today. That's elliptic.co/coindesk.
You've been through a lot of cycles in this industry, right? And have had a kind of experience watching things come and go. And you had a tweet that said, in crypto's brief history, we've seen numerous crypto narratives come and go. However, DeFi is one of the very few that's bound to stay. Why? Since Bitcoin, we have value on blockchains. The next logical step is to trade it, lend it, borrow it, collateralize it, transfer the risk of it, etc. So I guess for people who don't know, like how long have you been in this space? What have you been watching? And what got you so excited about or what makes you have high conviction in DeFi?
I've been following Bitcoin since 2012, Ethereum 2014. Obviously, there was this huge, crazy ICO boom in 2017. But all these years, I guess maybe since Ethereum, to be very honest, I haven't seen anything that really excites me. And to be very honest, as I told you before, I missed the first 3x earlier this year in DeFi. But after I lost interest in macro and started dabbling in DeFi maybe around May. At that time, I was still skeptical, to be honest. I knew DeFi was real, but I didn't think that DeFi was going to come this early because I kind of thought a lot of things weren't ready, especially scalability, the number of MetaMask installations. I thought DeFi wasn't ready, but I was quickly proven wrong, especially when Compound, the Compound incentive mining came out in June. I guess that was the turning point. That was the inflection point in the DeFi mania in the summer. But the moment I really thought DeFi was real was after playing around with maybe half a dozen of DeFi products, right? The blue chips, Uniswap, Aave, Compound, all these products that people use. And that's when you realize, holy shit, this thing is actually really different from your traditional financial products. Like it just feels different. Like it's very hard to describe DeFi in an abstract way to people who haven't used the product. You really have to use it in order to understand why this thing is so different. And when I first used these products, it just felt like when I first used Bitcoin, which is, you know, the ability to transfer or to use some financial product in a way that's that where I have complete freedom and complete control and no censorship and complete control of my I guess, data privacy. I mean, it's not complete private, but I have control over it, right? It was just very reminiscent of Bitcoin. But that tweet that you just mentioned that I tweeted out was exactly this, is that when Bitcoin first came out, we have some value on a global distributed ledger. We had the ability to frictionlessly store and transfer value, and that was Bitcoin. Now, the next logical step is just, you know, collateralize the value, lend the value, borrow the value, or transfer the risk of the value, right? And that's DeFi. It's really the next logical step. So that's why I say, like, if you understand Bitcoin, there's absolutely no excuse for not understanding DeFi. It's the same thing. It's just the next logical step. So I think DeFi is here to stay.
Do you think, how do you see base assets for DeFi playing out? Like, do you see Bitcoin becoming kind of the reserve asset for most of DeFi? Do you think it'll be Ethereum? Do you think it moves to other chains? Is it kind of like some crazy melange that mixes everything?
Again, I think you need to play around with the product in order to make a conclusion or hypothesis. I think RapidBTC just feels pretty good, to be honest. So I don't see why Bitcoin cannot become the reserve currency of DeFi. And if we do come from an Ethereum-centric DeFi world into a multi-chain DeFi world, then it's going to be even more competition for Ethereum, for Ether, the asset. So I'm of the view that maybe 60%, I'm not entirely sure, but maybe 60% that Bitcoin is going to be the reserve currency alongside the stable coins, of course, right? I mean, stable coins are always going to, I mean, as long as the regulators are going to fuck with the stable coins, they're always going to be the primary asset for DeFi, just because it's easier for mental accounting and store value.
How much have you been paying attention to stablecoins this year? Again, speaking of, it's fascinating, like the beginning of the year alongside that macro narrative, obviously all of a sudden stablecoins shot right up, right? And then July starts and we start minting $100 million in stablecoins a day. And I think we might've just passed 20 million total or 20 billion total, excuse me. But there's been so much focus on DeFi that's kind of like it dropped off as a crypto narrative.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I think there are two main catalysts for the stablecoin growth. One is the macro narrative earlier this year, right? Like U.S. dollar was the ultimate safe haven, for better or for worse. Even gold really underperformed U.S. dollar during the first sell-off or deleveraging. And then the second catalyst was DeFi, I think, right? When the yield went all the way from like 8%. To maybe 50%, all the stable coins came in. And also that was the story with RapidBTC, I think, right? People minted RapidBTC and, you know, synthetic US. Basically, RapidBTC is the BTC version of stable coins, right? Like these are just synthetic BTC and synthetic dollars. So people minted a bunch of these synthetic assets or synthetic reserve assets and used them for yield farming, basically. I think this was the second catalyst for stablecoins this year.
So I'm interested in, you know, you are not someone who follows hype cycles. I can say that pretty confidently, having, you know, paid attention closely to, crypto content for the last few years. What do you think is the best critique of DeFi and the worst critique? Best critique can also be, it doesn't mean that it's like fully right. It's more like, what's the right type of healthy skepticism, I guess you could say.
I would say the main challenges for DeFi are still, I think it's regulation, frankly, because everything else is a solvable problem. Like tech is a solvable problem. MetaMask installation is a solvable problem. It just takes time. But regulations is something that we don't really have full control over. We could do something like, you know, Coin Center and really like with active evangelism for DeFi. But if regulators wanted to kill a new technological innovation, they could do that. They can kill it. They can never kill it completely, but they can make it very hard to use through a bunch of new regulations. I think this is the main challenge, to be honest. And, you know, I'm, as I told you earlier, I've been running the DeFi Alliance for a few months, and this is probably the biggest problem that we're working on right now. We're going to announce something pretty quickly sometime soon, but regulation is the best critique for DeFi. Now, the worst critique, again, I think everything else is a solvable problem. I mean, what are some of the criticism of DeFi currently, right? Like,
I don't know. I think you hit the nail on the head when it comes to the regulation piece, that like this is ultimately escaping notice right now because it's escaping notice right now, but that we're going to see a repeat play out of, you know, I mean, 2 years ago, right, when the ICO boom was happening, people thought that they could kind of get away with it. And now we're just seeing the kind of wave of action stream in. And I think that there's a concern that people, it's, if the chief value proposition ultimately is kind of a regulatory arbitrage or skirting around legislation, it's not going to really work.
Yeah, I mean, one of the main benefits of DeFi products is the lack of KYC, which by extension means an easy and frictionless onboarding system or onboarding process experience, user experience. I think the entire DeFi at its core is about frictionless user experience. And the lack of KYC is a main part of it, and that can get killed by regulations.
Do you see any scenario in which that doesn't get killed by regulations? Like how does that how does that play out differently, I guess, is maybe the interesting counterfactual.
You know, I'm not an expert in the regulation.
Sure,
side of
yeah,
things,
me neither.
So unfortunately, I can't provide an informed answer. I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting. I mean, I think that these, like, what's for sure, a lot of what I've said very frequently on this show is that I think part of what makes DeFi really different right now than other previous sort of, micro crypto narratives that have gotten really hot is that it's pretty much all in franchise players who know the stakes and can actually like experiment together. And when losses happen, they happen with an informed audience, right? It's a very different than Korean pensioners, you know, buying a bunch of Cardano, you know, in 2017 and things like that. And so I think that the experimentation is really interesting. The question is, and, you know, I think a lot of the legal experts feel like it might be all for naught because the coolest things just are going to get stomped out by the heavy hand of regulation, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
It'll be interesting to see. So let me ask you a question about another narrative, which I actually haven't covered very much on the show, but is something I saw another tweet from you. You were talking, I think it was the beginning of September, and you were talking about the kind of rapid shift over to discussion of NFTs. What's your take on that? Like, you know, how has that changed since then? You know, was it just people looking for something else to talk about because DeFi started to cool down a little bit? Like,
yeah, for sure. I mean, it's both. I mean, first of all, this fucking NFT narrative is so fucking dumb. Sorry about my language, but it's not that the NFT projects are dumb. Like there's some really great projects, but NFT it stands for literally non-fungible token. Like being bullish on NFT is like being bullish on ERC-20. What the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like if you want to be bullish on something, you want to be bullish on some applications that are build using NFTs, using whatever non-fungible token standard on Ethereum or whatever, right? So NFT, this narrative itself does not make any sense. Now, am I bullish on NFTs? Sure. I mean, there's absolutely no reason why NFTs are not going to succeed, right? I mean, we've seen fungible tokens accrue a ton of value since Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a fungible token. Right? And then all these ERC-20s have non-zero value, right? So, I mean, we've already seen $200 to $300 billion worth of value being stored in fungible tokens. So why can't non-fungible tokens accrue a ton of value, right? I mean, this is my high-level take. Now, I haven't dug into like very deep into like the NFT world. And I've seen a few projects here and there. Some are very interesting. The aggregation place, the exchange place, you know, NFT exchanges, NFT, you know, lending, borrowing, whatever. Like these make sense. I mean, if they can be done on fungible tokens, why can't they not be done on non-fungible tokens? Now, I'm not an expert again, but I can see NFT becoming very big. At the same time, this recent, you brought up this really good point that this recent rise in the NFT narrative was really, really because of the fatigue with the DeFi narrative. It's so obvious and so stupid. I mean, the entire crypto market just constantly looking for a new narrative. That's been the case since the dawn of time.
No, I think it's interesting. I think it's a great clarification, not just for the NFT space, but for any of these spaces where it's like, okay, if the idea is that this underlying technology or enables some type of thing that wasn't possible before, then the question is the thing that it enables going to be significant in some way? And there's a full range of possibilities. Like, I think that digital collectibles have they have both a lot of opportunity, but they also have a lot to prove. I also get the feeling often with them that it's not in the same way that you can't say like our book's going to be big or like our movie's going to be big. It's going to be specific genres, or you know what I mean? Like where it's you're basically with NFTs, you introduce culture, not just finance, and figuring out where a culture is going to drift and how people are going to ascribe value to cultural assets is very different than pure play financial assets. And all the speculation in the world won't make it so if people don't care. I wouldn't be surprised if NFT's real heyday or digital collectibles' real heyday isn't until you actually have virtual worlds where digital there's a complementary way to display your digitally scarce asset. You know, that's such a huge part of people knowing that you own a thing and being able to show off that you own a thing is such a big piece of it, you know?
Exactly. That's the core of digital collectible. It's this sentiment attachment or being able to show off the thing that you own. I think you would have to see some kind of Instagram for NFTs before NFTs. I mean, it's kind of like the relationship between an Instagram NFT and NFTs is kind of like the relationship between Bitcoin and Coinbase, right? Bitcoin and Coinbase, early on, they help each other become successful. And we need to see that in NFTs as well, right? We're gonna have to see an Instagram for NFTs where people can show off their NFTs. In order for NFT, the NFT sector to become successful and vice versa.
I mean, this is also interesting because it comes back to another thing that I've thought a lot about DeFi, which is like, we always have an ambition for things to get very big, very fast, you know, like, especially, I mean, this is a very human tendency. If you see a potential future that you really believe in, you want it to be so, you want to bring other people into that. But these kind of micro ecosystems are growing up in a way that is like, I think that it doesn't diminish the value of them for them to be small or only have a certain number of kind of early adopters who believe in that, right? Like we're in the kind of early stages of bootstrapping that sort of value, particularly when it comes to something like digital collectibles. And that doesn't mean that it's inevitable that we kind of cross the chasm or anything, but it's certainly like, I mean, I think it's similar with DeFi. Like it doesn't feel to me like the type of thing where you want all of a sudden a bunch of normies, you know, to like flood into the space and start playing around. It would create this chaos in the system, you know?
Yep, for sure.
Fascinating stuff. What else are you paying attention to? What else is interesting? What else, you know, between now and the end of the year, what do you think might happen in Bitcoin or crypto that's worth kind of keeping an eye on?
For me, it's the same story. I mean, I'm short-term bearish on DeFi, but I still spend all my time helping founders, looking at new projects. I mean, now till the end of the year, it's such a short time horizon. But I guess if you want to look a little bit beyond that, then, you know, under collateralized lending is something that I'm super excited about. The ability for anyone to borrow money when they have nothing to collateralize and use that money to start a venture, start a business. I mean, that's the cornerstone of capitalism. if we can do that on DeFi, then it's gonna be great. It's one of the first definitively positive some products for DeFi. Synthetic assets, that's also another very big sector. Again, I don't understand the regulatory side of things, but assuming we can fix that problem, then I think synthetic assets will be really, really, really big.
Well, I appreciate you hanging out for a little bit. It's really fun. I'd love to do this more frequently. I think your hot takes are always piping hot. And so thanks for hanging out today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your time as well.
I think that in the wake of both the UK's ban on crypto derivatives yesterday and the CFTC and the Department of Justice going after BitMEX from last week, it's hard not to dwell on this question of whether this entire space is going to be regulated out of existence. If you listen to my interview with Preston Byrne and Stephen Paley from last week, you'll hear how much skepticism they have that DeFi can survive the same sort of culling we're seeing now a couple years on that happened to the ICO era projects. Even in that conversation with Chow, he acknowledged that certain aspects of the regulatory regime, like derivatives regulation, are really important and serve a purpose. So how do you reconcile that with this incredibly fast-moving, almost financial engineering type of online money games that is DeFi right now? The permissionless nature of it, the frictionless nature of it, these things that are so empowering to people who are in the crypto space and who are focused on that use case are the same types of things that are going to raise major red flags with regulators. I think for those who are invested in this space, working now before it becomes an issue to work with regulators to help them understand what value propositions are being proposed, why this is a valuable addition to the overall space, how you avoid abuses that they're going to be concerned about, and just generally make it part of an innovation package that is of value to them rather than something that's an easy sacrificial lamb, feels really, really important. Anyways, guys, I'm interested to know what you think. Hit me up on Twitter at NLW or at BreakdownNLW, which is where you can find the podcast. Let me know what you think about Chow's argument for why Bitcoin itself will likely end up the reserve asset of the space. And by the way, I wanted to say a big thanks to everyone who has rated and reviewed the show recently. They're really helping people find and discover this thing. So thank you, thank you, thank you, and keep it going. Anyways, guys, until tomorrow, be safe and take care of each other. Peace.